This episode is proudly sponsored by The Helix, a new innovation district located in New Brunswick, New Jersey, the heart of the Northeast Corridor. The Helix provides a critical ecosystem for innovation by offering a range of physical environments, a vibrant community of leading innovators, and a strategic central location on the Northeast Corridor. The Helix will uniquely mix workspaces, classrooms, laboratories, venues, and collaborative environments, creating a dynamic community and setting for innovative minds. Universities, startups, Fortune 500 companies, entrepreneurs, researchers, and many others will all call the Helix home. Thus far, the Helix has assembled a community of innovative private and public organizations, such as Rutgers Health, the New Jersey Innovation Hub, RWJ Barnabas Health, Hackensack Meridian Health, universities from Ireland and Israel, and others. The Helix is where ideas will come to life. To learn more, visit helixnj.com.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
From NJ.com and the Star Ledger, welcome to the Rutgers Rant, your one-stop podcast for the Scarlet Knights, with your hosts, Steve Politti, and Rutgers insiders, Brian Fonseca and Pat Lenny. Let's start chopping.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the Rutgers Rant. It's just me and Fonseca this week. We gave Lanny the day off. He was covering Rutgers wrestling. We'll talk about that in a minute. We're going to talk about basketball, of course, whatever football news we have. But first, because people who listen to this podcast often know just how much we love to talk about soccer. And when I say we, I mean specifically you love to talk about soccer. How about this? The World Cup final coming to MetLife Stadium, coming to New Jersey, in what I can only describe as an upset, because I was writing about it today and people were legitimately shocked. What's your reaction? You pumped? You jacked?
Yeah, I'm stunned. I'm with you because you've been reading in the past couple of weeks that Dallas felt really confident that they'd have it. And that's after LA felt really confident that they'd have it for a while. And yeah, I think everyone is kind of stunned. I think it's the right move. Obviously biased, but you know, you're right next to a place called Soccer Town USA, the greatest town in the entire country. You are in a hotbed of soccer loving people. Newark is right around the corner, full of, you know, Portuguese, Brazilian, So many South American people who live and breathe this sport. I love the sport, obviously, as you guys who listen to the podcast know. So I'm super excited. I think on a personal note, like, I wasn't old enough to remember this, but I've heard about when the European Championships were in Portugal, and I know you were there covering it for the Ledger, but I've heard a lot from my uncles and from my parents and from people who lived it, like the experience of living through an international tournament in your country and just when the country's doing well, which I expect the United States to do in 2026, just what it does for the spirit of people and like how exciting it could be. So I'm pumped up, man. I cannot be more excited.
And really, the funny part about it is the like legit surprise. People in the host committee were preparing the media for bad news today, I think, because all of the leaks were about Dallas. I mean, they didn't have a media event. You know, Dallas had this huge press conference. Everyone was waiting there for the cameras. And then the FIFA president, who appeared to be dressed in beige pajamas. I don't understand that. The whole show, by the way, I mean, your sport is weird. You know how I feel about it. Like, we make fun of like our selection show for the NCAA tournament. I mean, this thing was a disgrace. It was just, you had Kevin Hart for no reason. All these bad jokes, just complete nonsense, you know, the whole thing. Anyway, but when they
in my defense, I think what they were trying to do is Americanize whatever this announcement is. They're trying to go full-blown American. They're not great at this announcing stuff, but like, if you watch the Champions League finals recently, they started doing like pre-game, like concerts, halftime show kind of thing. Do you like the Super Bowl? They were trying to get in the Super Bowl spirit.
Anyway, so he says the winner is New York, New Jersey. And like, I mean, legit. I actually talked to Governor Murphy, a little name drop there. Talked to the governor. And he said that, you know, they were completely jacked, excited. For Rutgers, I think this is probably going to mean you're going to have somebody, some team on your on campus training down there, I would think. Certainly, there are other options in the area, Pingree School. I don't know if Princeton or not, but there's some. I would assume Rutgers is going to have, have one of the world's best teams. You might get lucky. It could be a really good one. Who knows? Anyway, it's going to be a lot of fun, and hopefully, we're still around to cover it. Then I can see you sitting in the press box trying to explain soccer to me on deadline.
Heaven forbid I cover a Portugal game and I punch through the glass in the press box celebrating a goal. I do think
that would be the greatest.
I do think they will have people at Rutgers because whenever they have, for example, this summer, Brighton English Premier League team was in the area playing Newcastle at Red Bull Arena. They had a couple practices at Rutgers. They were in the APC. I remember getting texts from people like Moises Caicedo, who's one of their star players, just walking around the APC. So who knows if Messi's still playing for Argentina, if Ronaldo's still playing for Portugal, these guys might be walking around the halls of Busch Campus.
Who knows? That'd be fun. All right. Let's talk Rutgers sports, specifically basketball. A fascinating week. It's the best way I can describe it for this program. And I as I was writing down the script for the show, the thing I wrote down was, there's really two different Rutgers basketball teams. And usually when you say that, it's like you're commenting on the way the team played. But actually, no. I mean, they were legitimately two different basketball teams. And it's sort of fascinating. And, Steve Peichel, after that loss to Penn State, said, we're going to try everything. We're going to get in there. We're going to, we're going to figure this out. And he wasn't lying. I mean, they changed their personnel entirely. Certainly having Jeremiah Williams allowed to play was a big deal. But still, down 15 to come back to beat Michigan in a place you never won. That's a significant moment, I think, for this program, given where it was.
Yes. And look, the one thing that is important to bring up, and this is not to diminish the accomplishments whatsoever, Michigan has notoriously choked multiple games this year, multiple second half double-digit leads, mostly because every team that plays them demolishes them. They blew a 15-point lead to Rutgers in the second half, and that team, inarguably, is the worst team in the Big Ten. They are a complete disaster.
It's amazing. You watch the first 15 minutes, first 30 minutes, you're like, how is this team 7-14? And then you watch the last 10, you're like, okay. Yes, I see how this team is 7-14.
Very talented, completely discombobulated, embattled head coach, just complete mess. Rutgers took advantage of that. They held them to six field goals in the last 17 minutes, with forcing more turnovers, eight in that span. They came back they were down 15, they won by 10. In 17 minutes, that's very impressive. Closed the game out, I believe it was 37-12 and 18-2 in the last 4 minutes. Just surgical, great response for Rutgers to come back from that. And to avoid, I had it written, if they lost that game, they would be the worst team in the Big Ten. I had that written and I had to, cut it out. I think they got the one they needed to. I think they got a really positive debut from Jeremiah Williams. And I think the intangibles of that are a little bit of a boost, a little bit of juice for a program in a season that was kind of meandering that, again, I don't think this is going to turn the entire season around, but I do think it gives you a little bit of something to look forward to the next time they play.
All right, let's talk about Jeremiah Williams in both how he got onto the court and what he did when he got onto the court. The lawsuit saga, I know a lot of people, and we'll talk about this later, but a lot of people saying, why didn't they do this sooner? But to file the lawsuit, to get that, to have a Seton Hall lawyer. I mean, again, if you're in New Jersey, kind of the sports scene or even in the legal scene, Kevin Marino is both one of the state's most prominent attorneys and one of the biggest Seton Hall fans. He sits right there courtside for every game. So the idea that he would be the one who would get ineligible, it's just kind of a neat twist. But yeah, I mean, just another loss for the NCAA. Take us through what you know about how they got him eligible first.
Right. So in reading through the documents, the NCAA and Rutgers had been in conversations, or representatives from Rutgers, the NCAA, et cetera. The impression was that he was going to be handed a half-season suspension for gambling per the latest NCAA guidance. Mm-hmm. But the NCAA did not hand down the suspension officially until Wednesday night before their game against Penn State. But before I dive into the ramifications of that, Kevin Marino, Williams' attorney, he had been reaching out to the NCAA the week prior and saying that they believed he had served his 15 games already. The NCAA had said they were still working through the punishment, but he could not play. There was some dispute in emails inside the complaint. Essentially, Wednesday, they were given a 15-game suspension. The NCAA contended that the first 9 games of the year, which was prior to the December 13th decision in a West Virginia federal court that said two-time transfers could be eligible immediately, Those first nine games did not count. That's the NCAA's argument.
Weird. I
The
don't
Rutgers
understand it.
argument, I can understand it in the sense of you can't be double jeopardying, right? Like before that rule was taken away, he couldn't sit out those games for suspension because he was suspended for being a two-time transfer. Understand? He was ineligible. So I
Okay,
don't see
right.
how you could be suspended for a game you're ineligible for. I
Okay.
could see where the NCAA is standing. The argument from Marino and Williams is that because the two-time transfer rule was annulled, those nine games should count because the two-time transfer rule was, I don't know if unlawful is the right word, but it was essentially seen as not valid by the courts. They filed for a temporary restraining order on Thursday against the NCAA. Late Friday, they were granted it. Had they not been granted it, he would not be able to play until the 18th against Minnesota. He'd have to serve another four games of suspension. Instead, he was ruled immediately eligible, and he was able to play Saturday against Michigan. I think he was one of their better defenders. I mean, he gave them
Oh, by far. Yeah, absolutely. Yes.
huge jump defensively and offensively. You really saw signs of like a playmaker, a guy who can get in the lane and score, who can create some passes for Cliff, who can kind of make things move on the offensive end. That a side that's been a little static for Rutgers at times this year.
Right. Yeah. A guy who's not looking to shoot first, a guy who plays defense, rebounds. I mean, he did take 12 shots. So it's not like he's not looking to score. But I was amazed that he played 29 minutes. I was just surprised by that right off the bat. Steve Peichel saying, "Hey, look, this is our guy." Noah Fernandes, 4 minutes. Austin Williams, 3 minutes. Wolfokin Palmquist, zero. I mean, it's just like it's entirely different. Andre Hyde, I think, had like what 18 minutes off the bench. So again, like this rotation that we've seen for the first 20 games, something completely different in this game, right? And I mean, you can see why, because he was very active defensively. Looked like he, I mean, they got into the flow late. Offensively, Cliff played better, Mag played better. I think there's a lot to take away from that.
I think one encouraging thing is that Steve Peichel did make those changes, right? Steve Peichel is typically a guy who does not shift his lineup, who does not like to disturb the peace, who likes to maintain things as they are. He immediately puts Jeremiah Williams into the starting lineup, benches his arguably the best player they've had this season in Andre Hyatt, who he had benched for 17 minutes, the last 17 minutes against Penn State, that he benches him to start the Michigan game, which is, I think that's got to be a good sign of like Steve Peichel is willing to do what it takes to win, to shake things up. He's not giving blind loyalty to the veterans, which is something he's done in the past. Obviously, past veterans were much more successful and had a little bit more cachet. But my point being, he's shown an ability to shake things up, to make some changes, to make some hard decisions, which I think bodes really well for the future.
Right. And he had to. Like, I mean, look, we didn't, we focus on the more recent game, the Michigan comeback. But I mean, that Penn State loss was just one of the three, four, five worst games at the rack under Steve Peichel. I mean, it was just a terrible 46 points. I mean, just the way they looked, they did not look like a Big Ten team. It was just, there's so many different ways that it was just a disappointing performance. And it's coming 20 games into the year against a team without your best player in Penn State, a team that in Penn State is already one of the worst teams in the league. It was just something dramatic had to change after that.
Yeah, that game was brutal. They scored 46 points against a team that was giving up at least 70, and I believe every Big Ten game they played, they were without their leading scorer. You can take some solace in the fact that they went to Assembly Hall and beat the brakes off of Indiana on Saturday. So maybe you can convince yourself they're on a bit of a roll. But I certainly think you needed to show some life after that loss, because if you lose to Michigan, things are really starting to spiral. I think this is a jolt. I think it gives them a jolt, and I think it's a really positive weekend for Rutgers basketball for sure.
Does it change expectations?
No.
Well, I mean, let's talk. We had rock bottom expectations last time we talked. Last podcast we had, I don't think any of us would have thought the NIT. When you look at the schedule now, I'm just being devil's advocate here. You go and you go out Maryland. That's a big ask. Wisconsin at home, another big ask. But then you've got Northwestern, Minnesota, another Maryland game after Purdue, another Michigan game, Nebraska, Ohio State. I don't know. Does it? So you don't think that this that what you saw from that team and that those final 10 minutes could change the trajectory here a little bit?
They beat the worst team in the Big Ten. I think it's important to keep bringing up because it's a good win. The way they won, especially, they came back. You needed to get off the schneid. You break a three-game losing streak. All well and good. They beat the worst team in the Big Ten. If they beat Maryland, I will be starting to buy into that. I think you need to win a lot of those last few games. You need to steal a win from somebody, either Wisconsin or Purdue. You got to win a majority of those games against the Marylands and Minnesotas and Northwesterns. I don't see it. Listen, Steve, this team has the third best defense in the country. Third. And they have the 300th ranked offense. As much as Jeremiah Williams helps this team, I don't think he's going to be able to reverse an offense that struggles this much. Like, I just
there's
don't
a
think
lot to overcome. There's a lot to come. Is Jeremiah Williams, based on what you've heard, cleared to go the rest of the way? This will not change some decision here in the next 2 months.
My understanding is that yes, he's good to go. The NCAA would, I'm assuming maybe the temporary restraining order would have to end in the next 14 days. Isn't that how that usually works? But like with the two-time transfer rule, that was a temporary restraining order. And then the NCAA just kind of threw up their hands and said, all right, two-time transfer rule for the end of the year, whatever, who cares? So I don't know if the NCAA is going to fight this. I don't know if it's worthwhile. But in, let's say, for example, that this is reversed and he does have to serve the rest of his suspension, it's four games. So even if that is the case, he should be good to go for next season, which is really all that matters.
Right. That's the key point. Yeah. And it certainly looks like a big piece that you would plug in into that lineup for next season. And I do like, and again, like with the rotation, Pikul played his starters almost 30 minutes apiece in that game. And at least three of them you would think would be big parts of the team next year. So that matters. Absolutely.
Experience the Heldrich Hotel, a luxury hotel that's perfect for both the business and leisure traveler. Ideally located within minutes of Rutgers University, the Heldrich is convenient to all the action and activities at SHI Stadium, Jersey Mike's Arena, and the Rutgers University campus. The moment you walk through the doors of the Heldrich Hotel and Conference Center, you know you're someplace different. A place with an independent spirit and a boutique vibe. A place where you can immerse yourself in your meeting or event as easily as you can the local culture. Located in the heart of the city, the Heldrich lets you experience all that New Brunswick has to offer. Whether you're coming to New Brunswick for a fun weekend with friends, in town for a Scarlet Knights game, or attending a business meeting, book your accommodations today at theheldrich.com.
All right, so you want to take questions? I don't have any true or false. It's just me and you. That seems weird. Let's do some insider questions, and then we'll talk wrestling. All right. So most of the questions were about Jeremiah Williams, understandably. How many years of eligibility? That was one off the top. He's got 2 years left.
Yes. So after this season, considering he just played, he has two more years of eligibility. This is his fourth year of college basketball, but his first year was a COVID year. His second year, he played for Temple. Last year was a redshirt/medical redshirt because he missed the whole year with an Achilles injury. And then this year is number two. So that after this year, he has two more years of eligibility.
The next question was, has there been any reasons provided or insight provided as to why the Rutgers administration or Jeremiah Williams did not take legal action prior to last week? That I guess has to do with the fact that they had reached the decision for NCAA last week. I mean, what do you think there?
Correct. They did not. You can't do a temporary restraining order against the decision until they were handed the decision officially. And again, right, the 15-game suspension was not handed down until Wednesday. So then they filed an injunction the day after.
Gotcha. All right. People also curious about the other newcomer, Agboli. Is that pronounced? Am I pronouncing that correctly?
I believe it's Emmanuel Ogbele.
Ogbele. I knew I was going to get that wrong. I'll get it right before next season, guys. Do you guys think Ogbele taking the majority of minutes away from Wolfolk moving forward, backing up Cliff? And where does Gavin fit into this mix? We assume he'll get better looks with William at the helm. I liked him. I like the new guy. You know, he's very raw, no question, but a big body. He had a couple of nice offensive rebounds late in that game. What did you think of him?
I wasn't very impressed, to be honest. In his defense, he's very raw. Very raw.
Very raw.
He has not been playing the game for a long time. He has not played a game in 11 months. He's coming off a torn ACL. It's his first game since then. I'll give the big guy some slack, right? What was interesting to me is the fact that Wolfolk played 0 minutes, even if Ogbele is playing, right? Like, is this going to be the trend the rest of the year? Wolfolk, you saw so much potential in him last year. For him to lose out minutes to a guy who just coming back off an injury,
he hasn't shown me much lately. I will say that, like, and especially on the defensive rebounding end. So, if this guy can give you that, then yeah, I'd give him 10 minutes a game without thinking about it, right? I mean, that for me, that would be, can you set me some screens, get me some rebounds? Then yeah, you could play for this team right now.
I wonder if it was a decision purely off of tactical reasons, or if it's Michael sending a message to Wolfolk that he's not satisfied with what he's getting out of him in games. I believe it was Chris Corso, who was the color commentator on the radio for the game. Austin Johnson, the usual color commentator, can go. I believe he told a story on the radio of Steve Peichel gathering everyone in practice on Friday and essentially saying, whoever plays the hardest, whoever plays the best here in practice is going to play tomorrow. So I'm not sure if Steve Peichel is kind of sending a message of, guys, you're fighting for your spots now. There is competition at every position, and these are kind of just the guys who won out. That would probably make sense to me. I'm going to be fascinated to see how the shakeout in those minutes at the five spot will happen against Maryland.
Well, not just the five spot. I mean, if Palmquist didn't play at all again, like Austin Williams, we're just 2 weeks removed from the fact they got to get him more minutes. Now he's got 3 minutes. Nor Fernandes seems like he's just disappeared. And that's, I can kind of understand that. He hasn't really given you much. But it's numbers too. Back to back games, benched in the second half of last week, 18 minutes this week off the bench. He's supposed to be your leading scorer. It really is an interesting evolution. And I don't know, I couldn't tell you. Like, if you had to put a gun to my head, like what the minute breakdown will be against Maryland, I have no idea.
Well, a lot of those guys, if you look at the guys you just mentioned, Austin Williams can't come back next year. Noah Fernandes can't come back next year. Andre Hyatt can't come back next year. Oscar Palmquist can come back next year. Who knows if he will? I don't know if they're going to have the stomach to ask him to transfer 2 off-seasons in a row, but they might have to make some space on the roster. And I know Steve Peichel kind of dismissed the idea when I asked him last week if they would consider playing younger players, giving them some development time. He said, no, 4 times in a row. I mean,
Yes, yes, yes.
his actions kind of say yes.
Yes, yes,
So.
yes. But yeah, especially the Jeremiah and Jermichael. So, all right, more questions. We had a couple that I really liked that were just about pushing it forward with the NCAA. Sue in Somerset always asks good questions. Has any school ever sued the NCAA for loss of potential revenue due to that organization's delayed or wrong decision about a student athlete's eligibility? I'm thinking it was just because she was thinking that Rutgers had a better record at this point with Jeremiah Williams. I don't know if that's ever happened, but I mean, you just can't. The NCAA's going to have to get out of the enforcement business at a certain point. And Rick Pitino said that after his team lost to UConn, and he's right. I mean, just take one L after another, and everyone's suing him now. Tennessee, Virginia. It seems like every time there's a decision that you don't like, all right, well, that's it. You hire lawyers and go after them,
Yeah, and you win, like you said.
and you
So,
win, right? Yeah, that's the other part.
I don't know. They're obviously trying to figure it out. I'm sure you saw that the Big Ten and SEC are doing a joint advisory committee that has no power. We promise, guys, we're not going to do any funny business. I promise. Essentially, they're trying to, it seems like, usurp the Project D1 thing that Charlie Baker is doing, and essentially telling him, "All right, big guy, we know what to do. We'll figure it out from here." But obviously, it seems like we're headed toward a point where big time football is going to become its own entity. They're going to have to figure out how to work this. I know the guys at, the College Football Inquirer, Yahoo, Dan Wetzel, they do a good job of talking about this, like, interesting labor discussion of what do you do with the NCAA tournament when a place like Kentucky is professional? They have professional players who make salary off of the school. And if you want to play the NCAA tournament and they play St. Peter's, St. Peter's is not going to be able to pay their players. So are you going to have a system where professionals play amateurs? Are you like, there's so much to figure out here. I don't know if the NCAA is going to be the one to do it, but as many lawsuits as you want to have, the system is completely broken and someone has to put it back together.
That was another question. It's funny that you mentioned, is it time for the NCAA to be replaced or reorganized to create a modern governing body for college athletics? Yes, is the short answer. The long answer is it's more complicated, obviously, because we are just talking about the ones that need the reorganization are the 50 or so that we mentioned in the Big Ten SEC are looking at that now together, which was a fascinating little nugget that kind of floated. I don't think people made as much big attention, not as much attention to that as maybe it warranted, but to me, it definitely signaled that, all right, look, we're not going to wait for you. We're not going to wait for you to decide this for us. We're going to map our own course here, and then a quote unquote advisory committee. And yeah, I mean, it's just one more wrinkle that I think by 25, 26, this is going to look a lot different than it does now.
Yeah. And the change is just accelerating more and more. It feels like there's things happening every few months that, the college sports landscape in a year or two might be completely different than what we've known for decades.
Right. All right. Kind of a couple more. We haven't talked football at all yet. This was Joe at the Shore wants to know. Drake Shiano talks about how hard of an academic school Rutgers is, and the classes students have to take. Is there anything Shiano does or believes that more than most other head coaches? Will he let students major in small programs or I assume a curriculum where class time cuts into practice time, et cetera? Good question, Joe. And I don't in my time around Greg Shiano, I think there obviously, there's some athletes who kind of major in whatever is the quickest way to get it done, get college done. But he's willing to let, from what I've seen, he's willing to let some big time athletes who have come through there major in stuff that where he's got to, they have to build, they have, and then may not build the schedule, football schedule around classes. But he's not afraid to let athletes, the football players take classes that are not traditional places for athletes to go. And he talks about Rutgers being in a big academic institution all the time. So, I mean, it's not like, that's part of his selling point for coming here.
All I'll say is that every college football coach at every level says their school has incredibly hard academics, and they may be right, but I'm just saying it's kind of like a football coach saying that they play football at the school. It's a selling point.
All right. Looking through the file really quick. Mostly we've got like seven other people really want to hear your soccer thoughts, which cracked me up. GP, come boom. Fonseca, you did it. We're hosting the World Cup final.
I did it, baby.
Ironbound, going crazy. It's great. Yeah, it's pretty funny. Yeah, we need to indulge Fonseca. I did indulge him on this. But yeah, that's about all the questions we got. Wrestling? Talk a little wrestling. I can make fun of our pod partner, Pat Lanny, because I see there's a big pin. Who was it that got the big pin again?
Brian
Saldana.
Saldano.
Brian Saldana got a big pin, and Twitter went crazy and cut it to like, I don't know, 10-6. And so I text Lanny. I'm like, "What's the score? Is this?" Getting? He's like, "Oh man, it's 10-6, and they got a real chance now." I'm like, "Oh, okay. Feel like I've heard this before." And sure enough, what was it? Final score? 20-12 loss.
Sounds about right. I don't have it in front of me.
Never in doubt. Is that the sense against lost to Ohio State? Another one of those kind of.
Yeah, I won't pretend I watched the whole thing in depth, but it felt like from reading Pat's updates that all the wins they needed to get, they were unable to. They got upset at a few weights, and then they got some upsets at other weights that had they taken care of business at the other weights would have led to the upset. So they just were unable to do a full 10 bout meet. That's what you gotta do when you want to beat one of these big five teams. They are continuing on the search for that signature win. It's not going to happen against Penn State next weekend. It's just not. Penn State is maybe the greatest college sports team of all time, the way they've been operating under Cale Sanderson. Frustrating, I think, but we went through this discussion last week. It's kind of just you're in an awkward place where you are succeeding higher than a lot of people ever thought this program would be, but you're unable to break through the glass ceiling of the big five who dominate the sport, and they're all in the same conference.
Yeah, it just seems like it's harder to maybe, and I think that's part of it. It's just harder to get upsets in wrestling than, say, college basketball, where it seems like every time they play, every day there's an upset of some level. But yeah, I don't follow it closely as loyal listeners to the podcast know. But man, yeah, it'd be frustrating. It looked like it was a great crowd too. People, I mean, the clips of that Saldana pin, people went nuts. So it was exciting. Yeah, just not the outcome that everyone hoped would happen. But women's basketball had the outcome everyone hoped would happen, right?
They beat Nebraska on the road, snapped a 12-game losing streak. It's been a rough year. They've been dealing with some injuries to key players, which has not helped. So Cocos Washington will hope that next year is a bounce back year. But it's good to get off the schneid, stop the bleeding, get a Big Ten win, kind of hopefully build on this. And on the other end, Men's Lacrosse played their first game of the season on Saturday. They defeated Lehigh in a bit of a touch and go game, kind of. The whole game was within two scores or so. They were down, they got up, they tied, and they won. I believe it was 14-12 over Lehigh at home. The first beautiful day we've had outdoors in months. It worked out. So Brian Brecht and the program off to a good start.
What are our lacrosse expectations? Do we know?
I think that Brian Brecht's put the
NCAA
program to the
tournament?
point where NCAA tournament admission is the bare minimum. I think you want to compete for the Big Ten title, regular season and tournament. I don't know if Maryland is at a point where they were a couple years ago, where they were the absolute juggernaut of the sport. And I think once you get into the tournament, who knows? You could always make a run. So again, I don't know the intricacies of the roster. I don't know the strengths or the weaknesses. I just do know that expectations when you are a program that's reached the Final Four are that you should be in contention to make it into the tournament, and you never know where you go from there. So that's what I would say.
You also had a good story I want to bring up because one of the readers did about recruiting. You caught up with some of the recruits for basketball? Fill us in.
Friday, I went to the Metro Classic, which is a kind of a showcase tournament they have in New Jersey every year. And I caught up with two guys, Nigel James, who plays for Long Island Lutheran, a powerhouse out of Long Island, obviously. And he seems to be, if not their top, one of their top point guard targets. And they're right in the mix with them for him. Providence is in there, Marquette's in there, Syracuse is in there. And he said he's also talking to Alabama and LSU. But it feels like Rutgers is in a good spot with him. TJ Thompson has a good relationship with him. And it feels like that's a guy they're really pointing to add as a guard. Darius Adams is a popular name, five-star kid from New Jersey. His sister plays for the women's team. First onto the scene as a freshman, sophomore, and got some early attention from Rutgers. And Rutgers fans really got their hopes up that he'd be the next five-star kid from Jersey to come to Rutgers. He said he hasn't heard from the program in a while, which
Really?
he said was a bit surprising. I'm a bit surprised myself. It might just be a matter of, he moved out of New Jersey, went to La Lumiere, a powerhouse prep school in Indiana. He's talking to schools like Tennessee, and a lot of other big-time programs. Jalen Harrell, four-star forward from Massachusetts. He was on an official visit last weekend for the Purdue game. I caught up with him on that. Seems to have really liked his stay. Also close to TJ Thompson, another New England kid. I talked to a scout who watches high school hoops up in New England that was at the Metro Classic. He's very high on Jalen Harrell. He watched him play against the current Rutgers signee Bryce Dortch recently, and they said that was a good battle between two of them. Liked what he saw out of both of them. So that's positive. Brandon Storrs is a four-star from New York. He's cut his list down to three schools: Georgia Tech, Rutgers, Xavier. Rutgers is in a good spot with him. I would not be surprised if he is the first member of the 2025 class. He has not set a specific date to decide, but he told New York City High School Podcast recently that it would happen soon. So who knows when it'll happen? I think it could happen within the next month or so. And when he does decide, Rutgers might win. Just a couple of ones we mentioned before. Darius Acuff, the top point guard in the 2025 class, was supposed to take a visit to Rutgers when they play Michigan at the end of the month. That is off. He told Adam Zagoria at Hoop Hall, it's off. And Trey McKinney, he is still in the mix for Rutgers. Rutgers is still in the mix there. Rivals reported that Indiana and Michigan State are kind of starting to pull away there. Rutgers is still in the mix, can still contend. Smoke Williamson is the lead recruiter there. He has a good relationship with him. He plays for the AAU team that he coached for a long time. But that would be the crown jewel of the class if they can get him. You got to hope that you stay in the race through the end, and who knows what happens at the end.
Right. Rutgers, clearly, the short takeaway from all this is that Rutgers is recruiting, still recruiting at a high level. Not a Ace Bailey, Dylan Harper level, but still chasing guys who are in the top 100, who are elite recruits. We're not polishing gems here anymore. We're going after
Right.
good players.
The pessimistic way to read it is that they're missing on some of their top targets, these top 25 kids. The optimistic way to read it is that even their quote unquote fallback plans are recruits that people would be nuts over if this was 2017, 2018, right? So the level of recruiting for this program is clearly elevated. Now, obviously, being in contention for these kids is different than landing them. I feel good about where they are with Brandon Storrs. They're in contention for these guys, but the big key, obviously, is locking them up, getting the commitment, and eventually getting them to sign.
All right, excellent. Anything else we got to cover? I got a pack for the Super Bowl. That's coming up next week. Going to Vegas.
You excited for that?
Excited? It's not. I don't know if that's the right word. Staying at the Luxor. People listening to the podcast or Vegas people know that that's not the finest hotel on the Las Vegas Strip. So that kind of takes it down a notch. 7 days in Vegas is probably 4.5 days longer than I would normally do. But play some craps. Got ourselves a couple of good dinner reservations. Cover what should be a decent Super Bowl, I think. Although the last, other than the ending, the last Chiefs 49ers Super Bowl wasn't a great game. But it'll be all right. Catch up with Isaiah Pacheco. How could that be bad?
Should be fun. I would say, I don't know if they're going to have the odds up just yet, but if you can, take
All right.
about every dollar you own, mortgage your house, you know, go look under the couch cushions and put everything on that for Portugal to win the 2026 World Cup in at MetLife Stadium. I will be there if they make the final. I promise I will run on Ferry Street with a Portugal flag on my back. You guys can come drive alongside me like we're Forrest Gump, make it a whole thing. I'm going to dream about it from tonight until July of 2026. It's happening, baby.
Dude, we should turn this into a soccer podcast for the World Cup. And by we, I mean you and somebody else. Be a great idea.
You have 2 years to
2 years. Woo.
To get like a reasonable understanding of soccer and the landscape. That's a lot. It's a long time.
Seems like a lot. Seems like a lot of effort.
It's worth it. The beautiful game, Steve. Just imagine. Imagine you in the press box at MetLife Stadium explaining to the Italians how this works. We Americans don't know what we're talking about. You gotta represent the
Italians. Italy's not gonna qualify. Come on.
Have some pride, Steve. Of course they're gonna qualify. they're playing a friendly at Red Bull Arena this summer. I wonder what the turnout is gonna be for that, because whenever Ecuador plays there or Peru has played there in the past, really big turnouts. I wonder if the Tommy DeVitos of North Jersey are all gonna swarm to Red Bull Arena to watch Azzurri.
The turnout, whatever the capacity is, this is gonna be the turnout. Come on. Paisans, let's get that done. All right. Good job. I enjoyed it. Soccer talk, basketball team looking a little bit better. We'll be back, I guess, next week. Talk a little more Rutgers. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to the Rutgers Rant. To participate in the conversation and receive live updates about the Scarlet Knights directly to your phone, sign up at nj.com/insider.